Deutsche Welle. Africa Link.
Hello and welcome to the program with me, Assunta Latus. Coming up, South African government pulls out of platinum talks.
I believe they've moved long enough to reach agreement, and I'm expecting them to do that. And that if they don't, I wish them luck, and I wish South Africa luck too.
Also on the program, we go to Cameroon to visit the Indomitable Lions fans that cannot wait to have the vibes of World Cup beginning on Thursday.
That's a team that always perform very well when people less expect of them. I think we can go above the first round. I'm counting on the young players we have in the team.
Stay tuned for those stories and more coming up in the next 25 minutes.
Top story.
But first, in South Africa, the government has pulled out of the platinum strike talks. It believes that it has done enough in helping workers and platinum mines to reach an agreement. Close to 80,000 platinum mine workers went on strike 5 months ago, demanding nearly $1,200 per month. After nearly 2 weeks of intense mediation, Minister of Mineral Resources Ngoako Ramatoldi said he has taken the two warring parties to the river and it's now up to them to drink the water. Our reporter in Johannesburg is Tuzo Kumalo.
After 5 months of a continuous strike in the platinum sector in South Africa, the end still looks uncertain. In January, talks between the AMCU and three major platinum producers in South Africa, namely Impala Platinum, Lonmin and Anglo-American Platinum, broke down when companies indicated they could not afford the 12,500 rands demanded by workers. The Commission for Reconciliation, Mediation and Arbitration, CCMA, an institution tasked with resolving labor disputes, then jumped in to mediate talks between the two parties but failed. A labor court judge who was presiding over parts of the strike that had spilled onto the courts jumped in to mediate between the two parties, but also with no success. The new Minister of Mineral Resources, Ngoako Ramaklodi, who was sworn in 2 weeks ago, immediately sprang to action on the second day at his new job, meeting all parties in marathon meetings, but he also is giving up. The minister told reporters on Saturday that if no resolution is found on Monday, he is quitting the talks as he believes the government has done all it could to help the two parties reach a resolution.
I believe they've moved long enough to reach agreement, and I'm expecting them to do that. And that if they don't, I wish them luck, and I wish South Africa luck too.
And the ruling African National Congress is now accusing AMCU of working with foreign forces to destabilize the economy of the country. Party Secretary General Gwete Mantashe did not mince his words on this issue.
Some foreign nationals come and talk for AMCU, and it is a signal, small as it may sound, of foreign forces taking an active interest in destabilizing South Africa and its economy.
Economists are warning that a speedy resolution is urgently needed to stop South Africa from falling into recession. Platinum companies have lost over 21 billion rands, that's $1.8 billion in revenue, while striking miners have lost over 9 billion rand, that's just over $800 million in salaries. The country registered a 0.6% negative growth in the first quarter of 2014, and labor expert Tony Healy says the future does not look bright at all.
Well, I think it looks pretty grim, clearly. It's already grim given the nature of this strike. We hear about NUMSA potentially going on strike, and NUMSA has 350,000 members countrywide. So that's a massive industry, metal, engineering and the like.
Some believe it's now up to South Africa to force the warring parties to agree or brace itself for a recession.
Tuzo Kumalo reporting. Now, South African ruling party, the ANC, has also claimed that the ongoing platinum strike is politically motivated. Do the ANC's claims have grounds? I put that question to Raf Matega, an independent political analyst in Johannesburg.
I think that it comes at the time in South Africa where the country is experiencing realignment at the trade union level. And we know that South Africa, the history of the labor movement in South Africa, it is a political history because the unions are aligned with political parties historically. But what is happening now is that there is that realignment where the African National Congress is no longer having that dominant voice with the unions or majority of the unions in that particular platinum belt. This is because due to some of the fractures within COSATU, we have seen the emergence of a new trade union, AMCU, which is spearheading this strike that is underway. And AMCU distinctly does not identify itself with the African National Congress as a governing party. So this is making it difficult for the ANC to strike a rapport with the union, and the ANC has lost grounds that it has always had with the union. Hence, I think the interpretation that the strike is politically motivated is because other political parties are also seeing an opportunity to build alliances with the new unions, and the ANC is no longer possessing that moral authority to broker any kind of a settlement in this strike.
The ANC has hinted that the EFF, the Economic Freedom Fighters, is the party which is behind this, you know, strike. What do you think that the EFF hopes to gain from this, the ongoing strikes?
Well, I think that it's incorrect of the ANC to say EFF is behind the strike. The strike has been initiated by the workers. What we see EFF doing is that it is trying to gain a political mileage in this strike by aligning itself with the striking mine workers. That does not mean that it has caused the strike. And what is it that the EFF aims to gain out of that? Historically, we know that the ANC has actually had access to some of the voters through the alliances with the unions in the mine sector. So EFF, I think it is also hoping to gain by aligning itself with the new union that is the majority union in the platinum sector in that region. And it is expecting to gain political mileage. They are also expecting to embarrass the ANC to demonstrate that the ANC is no longer holding that moral authority to get different parties to agree to a settlement.
Ralph Mateka speaking from Johannesburg. You can get more on this by visiting our webpage, which is www.dw.de/Africa. You are listening to Deutsche Welle's Africa Link. Still to come is our special coverage on African teams participating at the FIFA World Cup tournament in Brazil.
Africa Link, because Africa is more than just a headline.
Nigeria's second biggest city has a new emir. The ousted central bank chief Zanusi Lamido Zanusi has been appointed the new emir of Kano, making him one of Nigeria's most prominent Islamic leaders. Zanusi was suspended from his post by President Goodluck Jonathan after showing evidence that the state oil company NNPC had failed to pay $20 billion into the government coffers. Is this good or bad news for President Jonathan? I put that question to Joanido Mohammed, a politician and member of parliament in Nigeria.
First and foremost, in our system, President Jonathan has no direct or indirect power to influence or in any way to interfere with the appointment of the emir of Kano. The institution of emirship, like all traditional institutions, are not even covered by the constitution. They are alien to the constitution. So as far as I'm concerned, it's none of the business of the president to dictate to Kano people who would be the emir. And if he had made the mistake of attempting to do that, I think there would have been greater questions than we see now. And whoever was the chosen candidate of the president would have lost because he would have been rejected. He's immensely unpopular with the people of Kano. So I can't see him interfering successfully to help them elect the emir of Kano.
Do you see him still maintaining his stand he had on the government before he was appointed emir?
That is going to continue to happen. It's entirely up to him. Because on one hand, as a citizen, he has the right to comment. But on the other hand, the dignity of the office he now holds. So it's up to him. And if I were in his position, I'd be very careful with my interventions and my choice of words in those interventions. Nigerians and especially Kano people do not accept their MS to be flippant and to be talking on every other issue. It is a dignified position. It is more respected when it is more seen rather than heard from.
What role do you think that is he going to play in efforts to resolve the Boko Haram issue?
Frankly speaking, the issue is beyond any traditional ruler in Nigeria. It is now left to the government of Nigeria to do what it ought to have done in the first place, bring the insurgency under some form of control. The government has failed, the president has failed, and I don't think any traditional ruler can do anything about it now.
I was speaking to Joanito Mohamed there. Now, the beginning of the World Cup in Brazil is only a few days away. And many people around the world, including me, are having the so-called World Cup fever already. Most of the teams have already landed in Brazil. Five of them are from the African continent, including the Indomitable Lions from Cameroon, the Elephants from Ivory Coast, the Black Stars from Ghana, Super Eagles from Nigeria, and the Desert Foxes from Algeria. To give you a bit of understanding of our African teams, we will be running a mini-series to introduce the four teams. We begin with the Indomitable Lions from Cameroon. And here is Moki Kinzeka with more details.
There is no visible sign on the streets of Cameroon's capital, Yaoundé, that the country is preparing for the world's most prestigious soccer event. Sportswear retailer Emmanuel Candy says his business is still going slow, unlike before when the Indomitable Lions participated in an important tournament.
We Cameroonians always rely on hope, and we are never prepared for big competitions. We should stop always hoping a miracle will happen for us to be qualified from the group and always work hard. It's very difficult to beat Brazil and Croatia.
A few Cameroonians like Njobati Joseph, a local material promotion dealer, still, however, have faith in their team.
That's a team that always perform very well when people less expect of them. I think we can go above the first round. I'm counting on the young players we have in the team today. The old school is like gone. We have some very smart attackers who can create a lot of surprises for the team.
Players say despite the challenges, they are poised for a better participation in Brazil. Striker Achir Webu says there is serenity in the team.
We should be realistic. It is our first match against Mexico that will determine our stay in the competition. We hope to begin well, but the most important thing is the state of mind of each and every player. We know what we have to do, and we are concentrating to avoid the errors of the last World Cup because it is practically the same group that was in South Africa. By the grace of God, we shall have a good World Cup.
Cameroon's coach Volker Finke has been in charge of the team since May 2013. He is the seventh coach in only 4 years. He also insists that the team will do well in Brazil, which would be the only chance for him to keep his job.
L'ambiance, l'état d'esprit de l'équipe.
The atmosphere is good. The state of mind of the players is good. We work together and we respect ourselves. I have not seen players who are jealous of their colleagues. That is why I can tell you that we are reserving a surprise for Cameroonians. They will see their team 100% committed and active.
That report was by Moki Kinzeka. Don't miss tomorrow's World Cup coverage when Moki will be visiting Didier Drogba's family in Abidjan, Ivory Coast.
Deutsche Welle, learning by ear. Listen up, shape your future.
Hello and welcome to Learning by Ear. We are on the seventh episode of this radio drama called The Promised Land, a story of African migration to Europe. In the last episode, Sule was shocked to see his friend Farahani on a news report about illegal migrants who were intercepted at sea by European border guards and sent back home. Meanwhile, Linda has been in Europe for 4 months now, and the reality of studying and living there is beginning to dawn. She chatted online with her fiancé Chivasi, but lied to him about how difficult she was finding things. Finally, Linda called Florence, a lady she met on the plane on her way to Europe. Florence has offered to help Linda find a solution to her money problems. So what's in store for us today? Keep listening to today's episode called Survival in the Concrete Jungle. We begin with Linda and Florence, who are meeting at the shopping center to buy Linda some warm winter clothes.
Wow! This place is absolutely amazing! So many shops all together in one big building. And so many beautiful things. This is the kind of stuff you see in fashion magazines, isn't it?
You're so funny. Okay, let's go and make you into a European African lady.
It's so kind of you. Florence?
Yeah?
May I ask you a question? A rather personal one.
Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
How did you end up here in Europe? Did you come to study or work? You seem to be doing really well, and I'm quite envious.
Okay, Linda, first of all, never ask a migrant, especially from Africa, how they ended up here. It's taboo. Secondly, hey, you don't need to envy me. You can have what I have too. But you have to be patient, and you have to make some sacrifices.
You mean I can have a car like yours, clothes like yours, and wear nice jewelry like yours?
Yep.
In that case, I need to find a job like yours.
Yeah, something like that. You're too young, though. Really, I think it's better we leave it for now.
I'm not too young. Otherwise, I wouldn't be here in Europe. I'll turn 21 soon. I'm quite old enough to make my own decisions. What sacrifices will I have to make?
Linda, people think that you only find jungles in Africa, Asia, and South America. But Europe is a jungle, too. The difference is that this is a concrete jungle. But the rule of the jungle is the same wherever you are. Survival of the fittest. We migrants need to do much more than the natives just in order to survive. Hey, do you like this dress?
Yes, it's beautiful. But I can't...
Go on and try it on. If it fits, I'll buy it for you.
Flor, thank you. I've never had a friend like you.
Florence is almost too generous and kind to be true, don't you think? After all, she hardly knows Linda. What can she really want from her? Linda tries on dress after dress, shoe after shoe, coat after coat. And Florence says she's happy to pay the bill. But as Linda is piling up her purchases at the shopping center, her parents have been given some dreadful news. Let's join them as they arrive home from work.
Shut up, you stupid dog. You have no idea what we've just been through.
Hey, come on. The dog had nothing to do with us being laid off. Don't put the blame on him.
30 years. 30 years we've been civil servants, working our fingers to the bone. Then all of a sudden, we are told there's no work for us. It isn't fair, Mama Linda. It isn't fair.
You had the director. He said this is happening all over the world. People everywhere are losing their jobs. So come on, darling. Don't worry. We'll manage.
How will we manage? Why is it always the little people who have to carry the burden? We didn't deserve this. No, Mama Linda, we deserved better. We deserved better.
Yes, sit down, my darling. I'll make you a nice cup of tea and you'll soon feel better.
I don't want a cup of tea. Why would a cup of tea make me feel better? I want my job back.
Okay, darling. I know this isn't easy for you. It's hard for me too. But you aren't going to make it easier by getting angry with me and the dog. Let's talk it over and see where we can go from here. Would you like me to tell Linda what happened?
Have you lost your mind? What do you want to tell Linda? That both her parents are now jobless and will soon be homeless as well? You know that our daughter is trying to concentrate on her studies. This will only make her worry. She doesn't even know yet that we can't pay her fees for the rest of the course. You will tell her none of this.
Maraga, my dear husband, I'm afraid you're not thinking straight. Linda is our daughter. She's the only child we have, and so she needs to know what the situation is at home. I think she's mature enough to cope with the news, and maybe, well, she might be able to help us.
Help us? How?
Oh, financially, of course. I hear that most African students living in Europe find jobs they can do in their free time. Why shouldn't Linda do the same? It's obvious that we're going to need some financial assistance. There'll be no salary coming in, and we've spent all our savings on her studies.
So she can work while she continues to study?
That's exactly what I just said.
I know you did. Why didn't you tell me about this earlier? Does Linda know she can do this?
If she didn't know before she went, I'm sure she does now. In fact, I'd be surprised if she hasn't found a job already in the university canteen or something, you know?
Yeah, you're right. Linda does love cooking. You know what, Mama Linda? That cup of tea is beginning to sound like a good idea after all.
I always have good ideas.
Ask anyone who's lost their job and they'll tell you. It's not only a financial blow, but also psychologically devastating. Luckily for them, or so they think, they have a daughter in Europe who can send them money once in a while. Back at the shopping center, Florence has just finished paying for Linda's goodies. And now they're sitting in a fast food restaurant having a meal.
Mmm, this chicken is yummy. Yeah. Flo, this is like the most fun I've had since I arrived in Europe. I'd like to live just like you. I'm ready to do whatever it takes.
Are you sure, Linda? Mm-hmm. You know, once you decide, there's no turning back.
Nice dresses, fancy shoes, warm winter coats and a tasty meal. What's there to turn back to? Tell me, what do I have to do?
What about your boyfriend?
Who, Shivasi? Mm-hmm. What about him?
Well, yes. Where does he come into your plans?
Well, he doesn't. I mean, I still love him, of course, but I have to think about my life here right now. He has his own life back home.
Were you planning to get married?
As a matter of fact, yes, we are. After I finish with my studies. But for now, I want to enjoy my time here and live like all the other students.
Okay. Can you keep a secret, Linda?
Of course I can.
I mean, a real secret from everyone. Everyone you know and trust.
Even my parents?
Especially your parents. And Shivasi too.
Okay. I'm getting a bit nervous now. What's the secret? Do you deal in drugs?
No. Come on, do I look like someone who's into drugs?
No, but before I came here, I was warned that drugs are a major problem here in Europe.
Yep.
Even with some of the people at my university.
Yeah, no, but no, Linda, I don't do drugs and I don't deal in them either, okay?
So what can it be then? Is it prostitution?
If I said yes, what would you say?
I would say, Florence, it was a real pleasure meeting you, and thank you for spending such a wonderful time with me. But I'm sorry, I didn't come to Europe to sell my body for money.
You'd really say that?
Yes. There are some things I can compromise on, but some things are against my principles, and that is something I could never, ever do.
But you said you could keep a secret, right?
Yes, I can. As long as it doesn't hurt me or those I love and care for.
All right, Linda. You say you want to live a life like mine, and you're ready to do what it takes? So here's a deal.
Want to know what deal Florence is going to propose? And what Linda's response will be? And what about our North African friends Farahani and Sule? Remember them? 4 months have passed since Farahani nearly drowned trying to cross into Europe illegally. Are they planning another attempt? Don't miss the next episode of The Promised Land, a story of African migration to Europe. And join us online to discuss this episode, including what African migrants have to do to be granted the right to stay in Europe by visiting our Facebook page, facebook.com/dw.lbe. You can also listen to this episode again at dw.de/destinationeurope. Until we meet again, take care and bye-bye.
And now a summary of what we have been covering. South African government has pulled out of mediation efforts between mine owners and striking workers. The ousted Central Bank Chief Sanusi Lamido Sanusi has been appointed the new Emir of Kano, a post that makes him one of the country's influential Muslim leaders. That's how we wrap up this edition. For comments and questions, drop us a line at our email address, which is feedback.africa@dw.de, or a letter to Africa Link, DW 53110, Bonn, Germany. Or send us a text message to +491609575 9510. I'm Assumpta Latus. Thanks for listening.